Well, some of you might already know this,
but I like to shoot guns. I like to shoot guns. I find that sometimes it could be pretty challenging, I guess, skill to acquire because not everybody's really good at it. So what I want to do for just a second is give you a bit of information that shooters should have if they want to be proficient in marksmanship. So whenever you shoot a rifle or handgun, whenever the bullet leaves the barrel, typically it rises, right? It rises to meet your sight line, and then it falls because of gravity. So that's some information that a shooter will need to know. You know, because sometimes, in order to hit your target correctly, you're going to have to shoot under it. Most of the time, in order to hit your target correctly, you're going to have to shoot over your target. You're going to have to hold over. This is something that shooters need to know in order to hit their target. You see, there are specific things that shooters need to do in order to hit their mark. The same is true of us as Christians. There are things that we need to do in order to hit our target, in order to hit our mark. I'm talking about heaven. Because everybody's goal, everybody's target, everybody's mark is heaven. You know, you may have someone tell you one day, well, you know, I don't really care about going to heaven. Well, they will one day. So that's what we are going to talk about this morning. We're going to talk about hitting the mark. It's sad that there are a lot of people who fail to hit the mark. There are a lot of people who fail to do what's necessary in order to make that goal, in order to get in to heaven. You know, I'm confident when I say this, that young people are the most at-risk group in the church, most at-risk group at falling, as far as falling away from the church. There's one study that was conducted in 2011 while I was preparing for the sermon. It came to the conclusion that nearly 60% of young people who went to church in their teens had left the church after high school. 6 out of 10 young people. Another study in 2016, a more recent study, found that 39% of young people are religiously unaffiliated. What that means is, you know, they don't really care about going to church. Maybe they're religious. Maybe they're not. Some of them are atheists. You know, they believe what they believe based on, scientific views. Let me just say that these are dreadfully frightening statistics. But can I also say that I expect more out of the young people who make up this church? You know, I haven't been here for very long, but we have good young people at this church. Am I right? Yes, we have great young people that make up this church. So we're going to talk this morning about why we're all going to make it to heaven. Now, this lesson, I've sort of made it primarily designated towards young people. But you know, if you're older, don't fall asleep. This really can apply to all of us. Right, this is a lesson that can apply to all of us. So we're going to talk this morning about why we're going to make it to heaven. We're going to talk about hitting our mark. First reason why I think we're going to make it to heaven, why the young people here are going to make it to heaven, it's because you ask the right questions. Let me just be clear. We all are going to have questions. You know, if someone comes up to me and says, well, Reuben, I haven't had any questions yet. I haven't questioned my faith yet. Old people like Jeff would say, he's not here, I can say it. Jeff would say, well, you just haven't lived long enough. Because the fact of the matter is, we are all going to have questions at some point in time. You know, whenever I think of someone who had questions, who questioned their faith, I think of Job. Job went through a lot. He went through some rough times. I mean, think about it. He lost everything he had. He lost his family. He lost his possessions. Job had questions. And as a matter of fact, he had really tough questions posed towards the Lord. Go ahead and open up your Bible, Job chapter 7. Job chapter 7. I'm going to look at some of the questions that Job asked the Lord. We're going to start reading from verse 16. Job chapter 7 and verse 16. And these are questions that Job was giving to the Lord. Job says in Job chapter 7 and verse 16, I waste away, I will not live forever. Leave me alone, for my days are but a breath. Job says here, Lord, just leave me alone. He continues in verse 17, what is man that you magnify him and that you are concerned about him, that you examine him every morning, you try him every moment? Will you never turn your gaze away from me, nor let me alone until I swallow my spittle? He says in verse 20, have I sinned? What have I done to you, O watcher of men? Why have you set me as your target so that I'm a burden to myself? Why then do you not pardon my transgression? Take away my iniquity, for now I will lie down in the dust. You will seek me, but I will not be. Job says to God, you're going to look for me, and I'm not going to be here. Job posed some tough questions to the Lord. He had questions. We're going to have questions too. You know, we may not go through the exact situation that Job went through, but there are going to be times where we have questions. And in those times, we have to make sure that we are asking the right questions. And here's why. Let me give you three reasons. First of all, there's an assault on our faith. You know, this isn't a surprise. In Job's example, the devil was assaulting his faith. Let's go back to chapter 1, sort of see how everything started. Chapter 1, starting in verse 7. Chapter 1, starting in verse 7, the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. And you can sort of hear the pride in God's voice here as he makes this next statement. The Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? For there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. Now Satan's skeptical. Satan replies to the Lord, does Job fear God for nothing? Satan's saying, well, God, you kind of make it easy. Verse 10, have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has. He will surely curse you to your face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him. So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. You see, the devil was attacking Job's faith. His faith was under attack. And the same is true of us today. Paul, in the book of Philippians, chapter 3, and verse around verse 18, he says that there are enemies of the cross. There are people out there who are attacking our faith. And let me just give you a couple of modern examples. One example is academia. Our faith is being attacked on the college campus. I mean, we send our kids to college so that they can make a better life for themselves. By the way, whenever I say our kids, I mean you guys' kids, because I don't have kids. We send our kids to college. Where are we really sending them? The battlefield. Young people's faith is being assaulted on the college campus. There's all of young people and other young people, they join these sororities. There's all of these immoralities that exist on the college campus. And on top of that, you have teachers, some teachers, teaching that truth doesn't exist. It's all about what you believe. Faith is being attacked in academia. Faith is also being attacked in Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood, if you think about it, has been normalizing sinful behavior for years. I mean, we could think about a somewhat decent movie. We could think about The Notebook, right? In The Notebook, there's a young woman, she's engaged. But there's another guy who she truly loves, right? So she has immoral relations with this guy, but it's okay because she truly loves him. See, Hollywood has been normalizing sinful behavior for years. There is an attack on our faith. And that's one of the reasons why we need to ask the right questions. Second, can I just say that there's nothing wrong with asking questions, right? Job asks some pretty tough questions. There's nothing wrong with that. Go to the end of the book of Job and see how the Lord responds to Job. Job chapter 42. Chapter 42 and verse 7. Notice how the Lord replies. Job chapter 42 and verse 7. It came about after the Lord had spoken these words to Job that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends because you have not spoken of me what is right as my servant Job has." See, there was nothing wrong with Job asking tough questions. The Lord didn't respond to Job by saying, "You're sinning. You shouldn't have asked that question." The Lord said Job had spoken of him what is right. Now, when we ask questions, if a young person has questions, and they come to me, they come to Brent, they go to Jeff or their parents, they're not going to think you're stupid. That's okay. It's all right to ask questions. And that's why we need to make sure that we ask the right questions. Another reason we need to make sure that we ask the right questions is because there are answers to our questions. Now, let me sort of preface this by saying there are answers to every, little question out there. What Jesus' favorite dessert is? No idea. Did Jesus date in high school? I don't know. But serious questions regarding our faith, there are answers. We look at the example of Job and we see his questions were answered. Not in the way he wanted, but he did get the answers that he needed. We're in Job chapter 42. Let's start in verse 1. Chapter 42, starting in verse 1. "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted.'" See, in these verses, we see that Job learns exactly what he needs to learn. Job learns that God is all-powerful, that God is in control, that he can trust the Lord. Well, similarly, there are answers to our questions also. Whenever I was a sophomore in college, a long time ago, because I took the long route through college. I was paying my way through. When I was a sophomore, I took a geology class. I actually liked geology, so I took geology 1 and 2. And I left geology 1 with some questions. But you know what I learned? I learned that there are answers to those questions. So, can I just say that we shouldn't let these questions go unanswered? I have very high hopes for the young people here. By the way, who's going off to college pretty soon? Who's starting college next semester? Okay, I see a couple hands, but some people are shy. All right, I understand. Good. You're going to have questions. Don't let those questions go unanswered. That's why you're going to make it to heaven, because you asked the right questions. There's another reason you're going to make it to heaven. You're going to make it to heaven because you build the right relationship. This is very important. In my opinion, this is one of the most important things I'm going to talk about tonight. Our relationships have the ability to make or break us regarding our walk with Christ. And let me tell you why this is important. First of all, our friends have an influence on us. You guys probably know where I'm going, right? 1 Corinthians what? 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. What does it say? It says, "Bad company corrupts good morals." Anybody who's been here at Kleinwood for any number of time can probably look around and see people who used to be sitting in these pews that aren't there anymore. Because they've been carried away by the world. You know, I've had a number of friends who, godly Christians, some who went through preacher training programs like this, who are no longer following the way. Why? Well, most all of them, probably except for one, was because of the crowd they hung out with, or they met some boy or some girl, dragged them away from the Lord. See, our friends have an influence on us. That's why we need to make sure that we build the right relationship. Second, can I just say that we can deceive ourselves? 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says, do not be deceived. We can deceive ourselves sometimes into thinking that I'm too strong spiritually. I'm too grounded spiritually to let my friends affect me. I worked at a restaurant called Papado. It's all over Houston, so you guys know what I'm talking about. But I worked at Papado in Beaumont. And if you've ever waited tables before, then you know the kind of people who work at these kind of places. They're not always the most morally upright people. Luckily, I worked with a friend from church, so I hung out with him most of the time. But there was a young lady who I worked with. And whenever she started at Papado, very religious lady, she wasn't a Christian. She's very, very religious. You know, talked right. For the most part, did the right things. She told me and Alex is my friend, he's part of the church. She told me and Alex, she said, if you want to reach people, well, you got to do the things that they do. She deceived herself. You know, whenever I left Papado, she wasn't the same person. She used language that she wouldn't have used months or years ago. She did things that she wouldn't have done months or years ago. Sometimes we can deceive ourselves into thinking that the people that we are closest to have no effect on us. That's one of the reasons we need to build the right relationships. But the final reason I want to give that the reason why we should build the right relationships is because sometimes we just need help. Sometimes we need a friend to pick us up when we're down, because we all make mistakes. And whenever I make a mistake, I want one of you guys, I want Ruth, or I want Donald to say, Reuben, you need to fix that. You're not doing right. You know, I like to ask sometimes, who's your Nathan? You know what Nathan did, right? Nathan stood firm. He confronted David regarding his sin. We all need somebody like that. We all need a Nathan. Peter needed a Nathan also. Turn over to Galatians. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 18. We're going to read that. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 18. In this passage, we see how Peter and Paul meet, how they get acquainted to one another. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 18, Paul writes, then 3 years later, I went up to Jerusalem to become acquainted with Cephas and stayed with him 15 days. Now, Cephas is Peter, so this is how they meet. But there was going to be a time where Peter would need Paul's help. Let's turn over to the next chapter, chapter 2. Chapter 2, we're going to start reading from verse 11. But when Cephas, that's Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. The rest of the Jews joined with him in hypocrisy, with the result that even Barnabas was carried away. Well, here we see that, first of all, we see that Barnabas was carried away. Why? Because our friends have an influence on us. But also, we see that Peter needed a little help. You know, Peter needed Paul in that instance to say, Peter, you're not doing right. You need to fix this. Paul was a true friend to Peter. The same is true of us. We need those type of friendships. You know, I'm going to say it over and over again, I have high faith. All the young people here, I believe you're going to make it to heaven. I believe you're going to make it to heaven because you ask the right questions, you build the right relationships, also because you choose your own faith. And I remember when I was very young, the reason I went to church was because my parents brought me, right? I had no choice. I was living in my parents' house. They drove. And that might be a reason why a lot of young people here are here today. Because their parents brought them. Maybe you can drive, but your friends are all here. Can I just say that we need to choose, we need to have our own faith. We need to have our own faith because honestly, our friends' faith and our parents' faith can't get us to heaven. Now let me just say that our faith can be based on our parents' faith, right? We can have a faith that's based on their faith. But ultimately, we need to have our own faith. You know, this reminds me of Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 1, please. 2 Timothy chapter 1, we're going to read verse 5. In this context, Paul, he's talking about Timothy's faith. 2 Timothy chapter 1. In verse 5, Paul writes, "For I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am sure that it is in you as well." You see, Paul says, "Timothy, I understand that your faith is based on your moms, it's based on your grandmother." But ultimately, Timothy had his own faith. What does the beginning of the verse say? Paul's writing, "For I am mindful of the sincere faith within you." See, Timothy, he chose to have his own faith. And let me just say, we not only need our own faith, we also need to have the right faith. And that's what we've been talking about all evening, right? Ask the right questions. Build the right relationships. We need to choose the right faith because there's all kind of stuff out there, right, in the name of religion. I'm sure you can go down, what is it? I think you can go down 45 towards Dallas, and eventually you're going to come across a cowboy church. Now, I don't know what they do over there, okay? You can find almost anything out there. But we need to have the right faith. Jesus says this in John chapter 14. John chapter 14 and verse 6, what does he say? He says, "I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And Jesus is saying, if you want to get to the Father, well, you got to have the right faith. And can I just add on to that, that we've got to be, we're either all in or we're not in at all. You know, I feel sometimes we can fall into this trap of sort of being on the fence, right? Kind of having one foot in the world a little bit and one foot in Christianity. We're either all in or we're not in at all. You know, Christianity is not a cold pool. You can't just stick your toes in, right, and be okay. I don't like the cold, so that's why I use that example. We're either all in or we are not in at all. Jesus sort of echoes this statement in Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 24, Jesus says to his disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Jesus says that we've got to be willing to give up our life for the kingdom. And whether that means, you know, literally dying for the kingdom or just giving up our lives, giving our lives for the kingdom. The point is still clear. We've got to be all in or we're not in at all. This is one of the reasons why I believe everyone in this building and have hope that everyone in this building is going to make it to heaven. Because we choose our own faith. But let me just add one more thing in conclusion. We're going to make it to heaven because we do the right thing. Now, this point probably doesn't really need to be said because that's what we're talking about, right? doing the right things, asking the right questions, building the right relationships, choosing your own faith. But I kind of felt it necessary to put this in the lesson. Why? Because once we've done all of this, once we've asked the questions, built the relationships, chosen our own faith, well, there's still more, right? We never plateau. I like to use this passage. Turn over to 1 Thessalonians. In the 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, or near the end, chapter 4, in verse 1, Paul says, "Finally then, brethren, we request and exhort you in the Lord Jesus that as you receive from us instruction as to how you ought to walk and please God, just as you actually do walk." Paul tells the church at Thessalonica, you guys are doing good, right? You're doing everything that we asked you to. But what does he say at the very end of the verse? Paul says, I want you to excel still more. We've got to keep growing. If we find ourselves at a point in our lives where we're not growing, well, we're doing something wrong. I believe we're all going to make it to heaven. I have hope. Why? Because we do the right things. I mentioned this earlier, but there are a lot of people who don't make their goal, who don't hit their mark. Why? Ultimately, it's because they don't do the things necessary to hit the target. They don't do the things necessary in order for them to obtain salvation. And I have faith that that's not anyone in this building. I have faith that we're all going to make it to heaven. But maybe there's someone here tonight who's a Christian but has wandered away. Well, if that's you, you can come back to the Lord. You can do the right things. Maybe there's someone who hasn't entered into a relationship with Christ just yet, and you want to. You know what you need to do. You need to be baptized into his death, raised up a new person, turned away from your sins. Well, that's you. You can fix that tonight also. Whatever you need, you can come now as we stand and as we sing.